Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women Podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women. I'm very excited to welcome Anna Lambert, Director of Talent Acquisition at Shopify. She's also the co-creator of The Guild. This is a new and casual organization for SMEs to come together and learn from each other. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, Janice. Thanks for having me.
So, fearless, by definition, is not afraid, or at least being bold. What's the last thing you've done recently that really scared you?
Well, last week I did a TED Talk in Canada, and that scared the heck out of me. The prep and writing the talk, it was a little more personal than what I normally kind of speak about. And then getting up in front of 500 people and sharing that with no notes was quite terrifying.
And more than that, you even had to qualify to be selected.
Yeah.
So it's not just, I have this idea and I want to do it. You first had to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to even find yourself on stage.
Yeah. So one of my colleagues kind of put my name forward and I thought it might be interesting. I didn't really know a lot about the process. I'd watched a ton of TED Talks and had been really impressed with many of the speakers. And then I was selected to audition. So yeah. I completed an audition. And then from there, I was one of the 8 who were selected to speak at the actual event.
Yeah, so exciting when you stand on the big red dot.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Yeah.
Feels so, you know, special in that moment.
Yeah, it did. It was nerve. I got to say, like, I speak a lot for work and I'm very comfortable speaking in front of my team and about recruiting and the things that I know so well. And this was about something completely different. And so just getting up there and telling a little bit more of a personal story was very nerve wracking.
So tell us a little bit about what you shared.
Yeah. So the talk is called How to Be Human. Mm. And it basically starts with a story about my childhood. I grew up in a really small town, not a lot of technology, mm-hmm. and just how my life has evolved with the introduction of technology. I started at Shopify in 2011 as an intern, and my kind of journey included my journey in my career was also a time where Facebook kind of became a really big part of my life and the use of GPS. And essentially, I reflected last year on the fact that I've lost some of the things that used to make me.
What does that mean?
So, you know, heads down on an airplane, texting or writing emails on my phone instead of saying hello to the person next to me. I can't get from point A to point B without my GPS. Now I walked here, I looked at it, I turned it off I think there's just, we can sometimes become so reliant on technology that we don't even realize it's starting to replace, you know, our own abilities. It can suppress our own abilities over time. So I talk about some of the research that I looked into when I was kind of doing my reflection, kind of the concepts of complementary and competitive cognitive artifacts, how technologies can either suppress or extend our own abilities. This is all David Krakauer from the Santa Fe Institute. So yeah, and then kind of closed out with the 3 things that I'm trying to do this year to be more human.
Which are?
Put your phone down. Use your brain. So don't always rely on GPS, you know, to make a decision about dinner. You don't always have to look at an online review. And then the last one is slow the hell down.
Mm. What do you mean by slowing down? What does that actually mean?
For me, it's like, you know, in the grocery store, you think you're so important. You have, you know, you've got your day blocked from 8 till 6 and you've got these half an hour blocks or whatever it might be in your kind of in your area of work. And then you get to the grocery store and you're like, oh, they're going so slowly. Like all you're doing is going home. But you have this sense that you like have to complete that task so quickly and you're looking around and people are in line and you can get so worked up. And so one of my goals was to be like, hey, chill the hell out. Look around. These are fellow human beings all with great stories, all like really important. And I'm sure there's someone behind you with actually something more important to get to. So just chill out, enjoy the process, because otherwise you'll spend your whole life just like rushing through tasks. Yes. Another one was just connecting with people. Like I find with like the computers that fit into our pockets, it's easy to be on a, you know, in a meeting or on a bus or in a, you know, at a conference, and you can spend time connecting with people over like your phone rather than the people physically in your presence. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of one time I was speaking with high school students and I was sharing with them that because they have this powerful computer with them at all times, and it's so compelling, particularly, I think, in high school, you know, you just want to see all that social sharing that's going on, et cetera. And we have this need, I think, to build resilience in our young people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I said was, you know, go stand at the longest line in the grocery store and don't look at your phone. That's just kind of, right? Because we have exactly as you so clearly articulated, this constant pressure to just go. And do we really need to make grocery shopping, you know, a competitive sport?
Stressful, no. Yeah, just try to enjoy it. And it's like about, I think for me this year, it's just about enjoying the journey. The smaller things, you know, meeting someone new in an environment where maybe last year I would have just been like, oh, I can get through 5 emails if I crank away at it right here. Or I can say hello to this person and learn something new about them.
I love that. Very powerful lesson for all of us. So thank you for that inspiring TED Talk. And we can find it.
I think it's going to come out in a couple of weeks. It was just last week. So there'll be a video and Kanata North will share it. I'll share it.
Perfect.
So hope you like it.
Okay. I'm excited. Absolutely excited to listen and watch. Okay. So when your colleague put your name forward, you know, and you shared it, ooh, this is kind of scary. How did you convince yourself? Like, what's kind of the way that you, when you're faced with that fear or that challenge, what does Anna do to get through and make sure that you kind of accept that challenge?
Yeah. So I do have a natural tendency, I think, because of my childhood to like experience fear and then be like, all right, buckle up. Like, I guess that's a good, like, you know, I think when something scares me, I perceive it as a challenge that maybe I can overcome. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, oh, interesting. You didn't know that that would feel maybe a bit scary. Okay. Mm-hmm. That might be a sign that that's something new for you to try, something a bit more personal and different. And so what can you do to set yourself up for success? And then I prepare a lot.
Yes.
So for me, being like nervous about something or afraid about something means that I will prepare mentally. I will prepare, obviously, writing the talk. I spent a lot of time doing that and learning it so that I am prepared, so that I know even if I fail, I've done everything I can to kind of prepare to succeed. And then if I fail, those are external factors that I have less control over.
Mm-hmm. And preparation really does build confidence, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about how this comfort with challenges comes from your childhood. What was the 10-year-old Anna Lambert like? And tell us a little bit more about this unique childhood experience in a small town.
Sure. So 10-year-old Anna. So I grew up with 3 brothers in a small town called Goderich, Ontario.
Okay. Which is close to what?
It is right on Lake Huron.
Okay.
So if you go to Toronto, if you're in Toronto, you can go take west to Kitchener and then Highway 8 west straight into Goderich. Okay.
Just keep going.
Keep going right to the lake.
Okay.
So yeah, I grew up with 3 brothers, lots of neighborhood kids. We played outside a ton. I lived on a house right on the bank overlooking the lake. So
beautiful.
Played down the bank, would build tree forts. And my brothers had this club called the Best Brothers Club. Naturally, I was not included in the club. And I spent a lot of my childhood trying to get into this club.
And where were you in the lineup?
I was the third.
Third.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I learned how to stilt to get into this club.
Really?
Oh yeah. I like improved my ability to jump. There were just like little challenges. It was pretty fun.
Yes.
But there were some wild things just like, yeah, like, you know, if you can stilt to Nana's and back, then you can be in the club. And so I was like, done. I'm going to learn how to stilt.
Oh,
or if
goodness.
You can like jump across this like pond, then, you know, then you can be in the club. And so, really, I mean, it sounds mean.
it was fun.
It was a lot of fun. And I grew up with my cousin three doors down, Emily. She's 3 days younger than me. So
okay.
We both, you know, attempted all of these feats. But I think what it did, funny enough, this like random childhood thing resulted in me, you know, people now throwing problems at me being like, hey, do this thing. And I'm like, well, I learned how to stilt in a week. So sure, I can do that. Why not?
You know, it's so true, the idea of like casting back to a previous success and using that.
Yeah.
Most people aren't thinking stilting, though.
No, I know. Very random.
That's fantastic. Now, how does the story end? Did you ever make it into the club?
At my wedding, they welcomed me into the club after many feats of strength over the years.
That's all it took.
That's all it took was like, yeah. But it was great. At 10 years old, though, I was pretty anxious.
Okay.
Like I was, I had a lot of anxiety as a kid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so one of the things, talking about like preparation, one of the things I would do because I was so anxious was just like prepare for the worst, prepare for the best, think about all the different kind of potential outcomes and get ready for them.
Wow.
And I think that anxiety growing up as I was pretty young when I kind of went through this very anxious stage of my life,
mm-hmm.
prepared me for, I think it's one of the, like a double-edged sword, like one of the best things in my life, mm-hmm. and probably why I've been able to be successful at a fairly young age. And it's resulted in me overcoming some challenges at a younger age, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So this ability really to run scenarios and every kind of scenario.
Oh yeah.
It's so relevant to your daily life, is it not?
Absolutely. Yeah.
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 So can you tell us about a day in the life of Anna at Shopify?
Ooh, they're all very different.
Yeah.
As you can imagine.
I can.
So I have team members, all over. So mm-hmm. in most of our offices. So I do spend a lot of time traveling and visiting them and meeting with folks externally. Obviously, we're looking for talent externally. We also focus on moving our talent internally. But part of doing that is being like a good citizen and a good community member. And so I do spend time, you know, with community groups and meeting with folks externally. Probably a day. I mean, let me think about a day. So mm-hmm. last week, I like to get to work early. I'm a real morning gal. Mm-hmm. So if I can, I go spinning at Wheelhouse.
Yes.
And then I'm like get ready very quickly. I'm downtown. I live in Hittenberg.
Okay.
So if in the summer I bike, in the winter I don't bike.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
And then I get right to it. So usually I spend like an hour kind of getting organized, figuring out what I have to accomplish for the day. And then I could be meeting with, you know, someone externally.
Mm-hmm.
I could meet with someone from my team. I have 7 direct reports, so I do lots of one-on-ones with them. I'm also a mentor for the Telfer School of Business. There's an international program, so sometimes over the last 5 years, I've met a new person every year. So
amazing.
I will spend a bit of time, you know, either meeting up with them or connecting with them. I make a lot of decisions. Like that would be the thing. If they're like, what do you do all the time?
Yes.
It's like absorbing information, understanding a problem set, looking ahead, mm-hmm. identifying like, okay, what are the various paths forward to mm-hmm. solve this problem? And then either helping to unblock so others can make great decisions quickly or, you know, or maybe it is the right move for me to be making a decision.
So because you make so many decisions every day, are there other things that you automate so that you don't think about them? Like, for example, you said, you know, you go spinning. So is that sort of an absolutely every day, like I get up, I know what I'm doing. And then, or is there still the variety?
Yeah, I wish every day I got up and went to spin. But I do, let me think, do I have like a routine?
Like, you know, sometimes the tech guys will do the jeans and
they have
t-shirt.
Like
the uniform or, you know, whatever. Or I can remember that President Obama was the same suit, you know, like just those kind of things. So is
just
there anything?
You don't have to make that decision.
Yeah, one less decision for somebody who's making decisions all day.
I think my morning routine's probably pretty similar. Like I either go to spin or I wake up. I usually I don't really care too much about my clothing, so I don't need the uniform. I just throw on whatever's there.
You just go.
And I just go. And I think that's been like, I what's nice about the Shopify environment is I've never felt this need to show up as anybody but myself. So if that day I want to wear a long, like, sweater dress, then that's great. And if another day I'm like, I'm going to put on that, like, wicked, whatever, pair of pants and a pair of heels, then I can do that too, but it's completely up to me. So that's pretty nice. I can just kind of go with the flow. And then I do try to, like, in the morning pass by different pods and say hi to people and have a coffee and connect, because sometimes it is so busy. There's so much going on that you don't actually get to interact with your team members or hear little stories or anecdotes that you know, they're not worth a meeting. But if you don't pop by and say hi or learn about something that they're working on, then you kind of miss some of the most important things. So I do try to do that in the morning, and then I'll get right down to it.
So it sounds like an amazing culture at Shopify. And it's not just because you're saying that. I hear that all over. So given the growth and success of the company and really fast growth, obviously in your role as director of HR, you're really focused on preserving, maintaining, and, you know, focused on culture, I guess. So talk a little bit more about that. How's that? What's going on in your mind on a daily basis?
So I joined in 2011 as an intern. There were only 40 employees at the time, and now we're well over 3,000. So a lot of people are curious to know, like, what's changed? What do you like more? What do you, you know, what do you miss from a past kind of version of Shopify? And really, a culture is just a culmination of the people and the behaviors that, you know, you recognize and reward, and kind of the output of what everybody is doing there. And so that's why I do think the TA team, the talent acquisition team, is so important to, to kind of not, I wouldn't say it's like cultivating, it's about enhancing, it's about adding to the culture. It's about shaping it in a positive way. So the first thing is really knowing what we do care about. And we've had some pretty strong values over the years, and we've been able to identify what characteristics might make someone successful here. And those characteristics transcend dimensions of diversity, like race, gender, and age. Like they're very much about, you know, what kind of environment works for a different type of person. So for example, we look for people who have a history of having had an impact in their work, in their side projects. So instead of saying, like, you know, you must have 10 years of experience and a degree from Harvard, we say, here's some of the problems you may have solved in the past, or here's some of the problems you're looking to solve in the future. And what happens is it opens the aperture of the candidate pool. We get people who maybe didn't have the opportunity to go to one of those top schools or to school at all. And they're able to kind of put their name forward and say, hey, maybe I don't have these things, but these are the skills that I can transfer to this role. So we have a lot of people in our organization who are like very focused on getting the right work done, on having an impact, especially to our mission. Like a lot of people join us because they do believe in what we're trying to do, which is to make commerce better for everyone. And so I would describe our culture as, you know, everybody is unique and everybody is encouraged to have their own unique journey. And that means personally, professionally, throughout their time. We really care a lot about impact. So it doesn't matter, like, ooh, that's great that you worked 12 hours today, but like what was the output of your work? And so, you know, when I talk about my day as an example, a good day for me is when I've me or my team have moved the needle on something important that ties to our mission, which is ultimately to serve our merchants, current and future. So I think when you're selecting talent, it's really important that you really know the values of the organization, and then you look for those predictors of success, because people make or break your experience in an organization. So if we start to let kind of assholes come in, or you know, people who don't care a lot, then it can
spreads.
It does spread. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually incredible how fast it can, how that negativity can take root.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite quickly. So essentially, if I'm hearing you correctly, in order to make the cut, it's really about values alignment and focus on impact.
Yeah, impact. So we have kind of impact. Trust is like, you know, the ability to build trust. So it's like, that's very nuanced. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I were to do your life story, there would be a history of, you know, entering an organization or creating your own where you're able to build trust with new people, build relationships with new people, foster those, grow those, have an impact. You know, you can really see your engagement over time, which is something that we look for. And then the piece I spoke about, which was like, we don't hire assholes, is it's really, so we used to say that, and then we were like, wait a sec, everyone can be an asshole. Like anyone can be a bit of a jerk.
Right.
So it's not about necessarily that specifically. It's about self-awareness. It's about the ability to kind of reflect on your own behavior and learn from it, and the ability to be like, hey, you know what? I didn't show up in that meeting as I kind of intended to, and I can see how that might have impacted you and the team. So that self-awareness is really key. And we look for that in interviews by seeing, you know, what they, how they describe what they've done, what they've actually done. And you can check that through, you know, I wrote a book, and then you look at the book and you're like, okay, but you and, you know, 100 other people wrote the book, not just mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. So how you describe your own experiences, and through referencing as well, which is super important.
Mm-hmm. So Anna, 2011, you started as an intern. There were 40 people at Shopify. And here you are now, the director of talent acquisition. You have a large team, global team under you. Can you give us the story behind this? Because this is super exciting and very inspiring, not just for women who may be young women who may be interns right now, but just to kind of challenge all of our expectations around how fast, when you're in the right environment, you can go.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all feels, I mean, it feels very fast, obviously. It's been pretty amazing. So I joined Shopify in 2011. And how I actually ended up there was I needed to complete a summer internship. I was doing the co-op program at Ottawa U. And I was in political science and communications. And I was kind of going through the process and found a couple of opportunities, and a couple of weeks before the drop date for whatever kind of job you were going to either take or not, I kind of had like a bit of a panic, and I thought, you know, I wasn't super excited by some of the opportunities that I was kind of where I was headed. And to be honest, in high school, I didn't know what career path I wanted to take. I certainly wasn't like, I will go into political science and then do this and then do that. And so for me, it was also just like a bit of a time of reflection to say like, where do I want to get the most experience? Mm-hmm. And maybe not necessarily in my area of, I mean, I don't know how much expertise, you know, a couple years into school.
Yeah.
So I actually asked a bunch of people in my network. I asked my uncle who's a lawyer here. I asked some other folks, What are some other companies? There were definitely intern opportunities with some organizations through the co-op system, but and so a few people sent different names over, and my uncle sent over the name Shopify, and I was like, "What is this? Like, I've never heard of it before. Yeah. It looked a bit sketchy. It was like there was not much on it." But I watched a video of Harley, and Toby,
your COO,
our COO, yeah. and Toby, our CEO, who were working with a group of students from Ottawa U, kind of doing this advisor. Like I guess they got to use Shopify space, and I thought, oh, that's cool. Like they value, you know, young people who are trying to start a business or trying to learn. But we were very small at the time. We were in the market, and so I reached out to Harley and I was like, hey, I'm Anna. This is what I'm up to. I talked about some of the things I liked doing, some of the skills I thought I had. And he wrote back and he was like, hey, here, you know, connect with Brittany, who's the HR manager. So I went and I interviewed with Brittany, and they didn't have any positions open. And She interviewed me. I was doing communications and political science, so I tried to be like, maybe marketing. I had no idea. And so she ultimately rejected me. She was like, we don't have any internships in marketing. But during the interview, I'd asked her a lot of questions about what her role was and what she did and some of the things she was working on. And I identified a few projects. She was like, "Ooh, this one's pretty tough. And this one's really exciting." And so I wrote back and I said, "Well, what if I came and I was your intern?" And I'd never considered HR before. But one of the things I've often just done is like, instead of looking at like the specific domain or space, it's like, find smart people you can learn from. And during this experience with Harley and with Brittany, I was like, man, like, doesn't matter what industry, this is someone who's like clearly able to teach someone like me. And it seemed like a really interesting environment. So I pitched her on the idea of me coming and being an HR intern. And so I went in the next day and met with a few other people and ultimately got the job as this like random intern. So they had one other developer intern that year. So we were kind of the first intern. So they've always really invested in like in talent. So I was an intern that summer. And at the end of the summer, you know, we were continuing to make our way through the kind of stage of growth that we were at. And I learned so much. And I think that was like the advice that people ask me for advice, like, what do you think like helped your career? And I think the key was not relying on like what my ego might say. Like my ego might say like, oh, HR is not for you. Like you've never considered HR, or what is this intern role? Like, it doesn't even have a title. And for me, it was just like, this is someone I can learn from. And this environment is an environment where they're clearly willing to be flexible and to teach. Like, I'm in university. Learning from anyone is amazing. Right. So I became an intern. Then I went back to school. I actually moved to France and I finished up my degree, my political science degree there. On exchange.
Because?
On exchange. Yeah, okay. There was this school I wanted to go to. And it was interesting. Like at the end of that summer, the environment there was such an environment of like impact that if you had an impact, there was an opportunity for me to stay. But I made the decision to go and finish my degree and to gain more experience. Like I grew up in Goderich. Ottawa was the first city I lived in outside of Goderich. So I wanted to expand my kind of global experience and see different things. So I left, but I stayed in touch and I stayed in touch with a number of people and reapplied for a different position the next year. So in 2012, I came back and I worked in business development.
Okay.
And I was a partner manager. I helped to build kind of the partner ecosystem. And again, just relied on like, who are smart people that I can learn from? And where can I maybe have an impact? So just honing like this is a skill I have. So how can I apply it to have an impact? And then the recruiting team started. So Doug Tetzner was hired as our very first recruiter. And we'd never had a recruiting team before. And so he joined and I was working as a partner manager. And we met and he asked me if I would sit in on a life story, which was this kind of the first step in our interview process. And I'd never been interviewed in that way because it was before we ever had a recruiting team. So I was like, no thanks. Like I know my experience with recruiters had been like sweating and feeling very uncomfortable and trying to be someone that I wasn't. So I was like, I don't think that profession is for me. It sounds like, you know, not great. And he was like, just wait, like come and see what we're all about. So I sat in on a few life stories and was blown away. Like the process was like, be genuinely curious about the person next, like across the table from you, ask them questions about themselves, understand like way deeper than just the CV,
right.
Really get to know them, the experiences in their life. And so with that, I thought, that's pretty interesting. And he ultimately offered me a job. So I had to make a decision between continuing on the business development track and going into recruiting. And again, my ego was like, BD sounds better.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, that voice in your head that maybe is trying to focus on like, how can I like planfully curate my career? Mm-hmm. But my instincts were telling me that recruiting was really the place for me, the craft for me to learn. And so I trusted my instincts. I've always had really strong mentors along the way. Mm-hmm. I sought advice and thoughts and feedback, and I ultimately went into recruiting. There were three of us at the time. And then I helped to open up the Montreal office. I became a lead. And then the best part of the story, well, I think it's pretty interesting, is Doug is an exceptional recruiter and joined as the very first recruiter. And as we were growing the team, he wasn't as interested or passionate about building like the machine, like the processes behind everything and some of the systems and layering on diversity and inclusion. And that was all, those were all things I was very interested in. So I just started doing them. And I learned a lot. I learned, you know, in the early days, everything about the craft from him. And I started to build the team. So how do we grow our own people? And how do we think about like recruiter ratios and all of these things, skills assessments? And so essentially I was doing the job of director of talent acquisition, but my boss was the director of talent acquisition. And I don't know that I've heard this happening in any other company, but we traded places.
Wow.
They were like, well, if you're doing the job, then we're not going to have you stand behind this person who isn't. Like, he's amazing. He should be doing exec search. That's right. His area of interest. So I actually became the boss of my boss for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, which was wild. And then the team from there grew from 20 now to, we've got about 100 people globally focused on hiring and designing high impact teams.
That's an amazing story. Thank you for sharing it. It also speaks though to the phenomenal culture that is Shopify and which you yourself are ensuring is nurtured and expanding.
Yeah, it's been pretty, I feel very lucky and lucky to work with some amazing people. I'm excited. Like, it really does feel like the beginning. It does. It just feels like people are like, oh, look, you've grown. And we've grown, but like, there's still that sense that we're just getting started.
Mm-hmm. So what's something that people might be surprised to know about working at Shopify, if anything?
That's a great question. Okay, it depends on your experience of Shopify. So I would say some people, like some of the feedback that I get would be, how do you get any work done? It's so fun. There's a slide there. It's
right. Like, great food.
Yeah. Yeah. So
fun
there's
environment.
Like this sense that like, it's just like, you know, I think some people have a misconception about the fact that we're all just like riding around on skateboards and go-karts. And it truly is one of the most, like the environment that was created, and that has to do with our office space. It has to do with ways of working, was created so that different types of people who learn differently and who have, you know, impact in different ways can succeed. And so it's a pretty intense organization. Like there's a lot of
expectations or
I think it's like a lot of drive. We hire very engaged people who want to do good work. And so, yes, there's incredible, you know, there are incredible lunches and incredible support systems for, you know, professional development and personal development. But at the end of the day, like everyone really is kind of banding together to try to build the best products. For our merchants, and our merchants, you know, the description of that is expanding all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would say that those who look in and say like, oh, doesn't that look like, you know, I don't know what I've heard.
Easy or whatever, just fun all the time or.
Yeah. It's like an advanced workplace is how I would describe it.
Okay.
And really fun. Like if you're into solving hard problems and you're into pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, working with great people who are direct, I would say that's another thing. Like sometimes you'll be in a meeting and you'll be like, "Whoa, okay, we're getting right to the meat of the conversation." There's kind of like no bullshit.
Yeah. That's refreshing.
It is. Yeah, it is. And okay, actually I thought of something.
Okay.
So we're still very young.
Yes.
We're like
so big.
We're in our adolescent years, right? We've grown very quickly. So one of the things that people are surprised by when they get here is like, you don't have that process in place yet? Like, how are you an X-billion-dollar company without that simple thing that you absolutely should have? And we're like, oh, we hired you because you know how to do that better than anyone else here. So sometimes people are surprised because of our success, because of our growth. They're surprised by some of the like simple processes or ways of working that we just haven't figured out yet. Cause we're a teenager, we're an adolescent, we're figuring it out. We're, and we do grow so quickly every year that there are some things that you might come in and say like, well, we should probably do this and fix that. And we're like, amazing. That's why we hired you. But you might be surprised at the beginning just by some of the things we haven't put in place yet because we didn't need them. And now we do. And that's why you're here.
Yeah. Exciting. So Business Development Bank of Canada had a recent study that came out highlighting the challenges around, you know, attracting talent, attracting and retaining talent. This is the stuff you think about all day, and that these challenges are not going to only affect companies like Shopify, but, you know, SMEs and, you know, that global war on talent. What, if anything, does it mean for you in your role and then in that wider sense for the company? Are you seeing that? Is it happening?
Yeah, absolutely. So we look to understand the markets in the locations that we're operating in. And we look to, you know, what is the talent that exists there? What skills do they have? What skills might we need to help kind of grow in some of that talent? We look at some of the skills deficits that might be kind of coming up in future years.
Yeah.
And then we try to kind of tackle it in a number of different ways. So our dev degree program, we've partnered with Carleton University. Right. And we basically, you can get your computer science degree through Carleton, but also while working at Shopify. So we cover your tuition, and you are paid as an employee as you're working throughout your career. So what we're trying to do is ensure that those graduates have practical skills that are relevant to the workplace as soon as they graduate, while also gaining the skills from academia and kind of whether it be the theory or the background that might be required. So that's an example of where, from a skills and a diversity perspective, we're leaning in to say, like, how can we actually help to shape, you know, what skills Canadians have? And in some other markets, we're looking into doing the same, but what skills Canadians have in 4 years? Because you can't sit there as an employer and say, like, hey, someone do something about this. Like, there aren't going to be enough developers, or there aren't going to be enough, you know, product folks or AI people or, you know, people with these skills that you're going to need. You do have to kind of lean in and figure out how you can also help to influence, whether it be curriculum or in our case, just influencing by teaching people along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's, I think, certainly something that we think a lot about. We also, as I mentioned earlier, I really think that companies need to shift their focus from such a prescriptive definition of success or past success or skill.
And what do you mean by that?
So instead of saying, like, unfortunately, you're not going to be a great lead, a great candidate for this role because you don't have a master's in X, say, like, really, what are the problems we're looking for this person to solve? And get to know people and their diverse experiences, because you'd be surprised by spending a little bit of time with someone and looking beyond the CV.
Yes.
You will learn so much more about someone and their capacity to learn or the experiences that they've had that are actually really tied to what you're hoping kind of they will do. But if you are very prescriptive about the expectations, we know women will self-select out. Mm-hmm. We know, you know, a lot of people who could be really amazing for your organization, they just won't apply. They won't put themselves forward, and you won't have a chance to meet with them to see what potential they might have. So just focus on potential. Employers need to open the aperture of the kid. If every employer could remove years of experience or like, I mean, obviously for doctors, like I'm pro doctors having like a medical background and an education, but for tech, it's different. Like I have a political science degree.
Mm-hmm.
I lead 100-person recruiting team globally.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example of a profession where you can have transferable skills. You can learn things along the way. Same with developers. Some people have an incredible experience through going through, you know, undergrad, master's, PhD, and they are amazing contributors to our teams.
Yes.
And others are high school dropouts who have learned everything on their own. Value both equally.
Right. Which is exciting because that means that, as you said, it's a wider pool. Mm-hmm. And you're really acknowledging the true skills that are needed to solve those problems, as opposed to we require specific certification in order to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, that's part of what makes Shopify an exciting place, because there's so much bold thinking about how to solve problems, whether it's those strategic partnerships with educational institutions or really that fresh look at how can we value skills to help us meet this fast growth, which I think is really exciting. But you're also doing some really interesting things. Can you talk to me about this amazing organization that you helped to co-create with some other Dynamo women? And I was lucky as your first speaker. So tell us about the Guild. What is it? Why did it happen? Who's involved and what does it mean?
Sure. So As I mentioned, I spin at Wheelhouse and yeah. I got to know the founders. And I've always, since I moved to Ottawa in 2009, I've always been smitten with Victoire. So whenever yes. I would...
Local shop.
Yep. Shopify merchant as well.
Oh, yay.
Yep. And so I always like knew of these women but really was, I mean, was a customer.
Yeah.
Both of them.
That's how it started. Love it.
And Nadine and Heather from Wheelhouse would often connect with other small business owners to say like, you know, hey, do you know anything about marketing, or do you know anything about this? We're growing our business and we need help. And Victoire has been a mentor to a lot of different businesses kind of opening up here in Ottawa. And so those two kind of connected, and they were sharing thoughts and ideas and started to connect on, you know, a deeper level. And then I started to become a little bit closer with Nadine and Heather. And I have an HR background or experience with HR over the last kind of 7 years. And so they would call me and be like, hey, what is your take on this? Or, you know, what do you think about this for hiring? And so we realized if these five women are connecting and learning from each other in service of growing and elevating their small businesses, maybe that's something that, you know, other people might want to be a part of. So we really just thought, and the first person Regine thought of was you. It was like, okay, Janice McDonald, we need her story. We need to hear from her because, you know, you have such an incredible experience and journey and learnings, and so many small businesses and large businesses can learn from your work. And so we invited Janice. This was really scrappy. We pulled together, you know, we sold 50 tickets. We got
sold out. It was amazing.
Sold out. You had a lot to do with that.
But there were
small business owners who were like, this is what we're looking for.
Yes.
Like, this is the kind of environment that I want to be in. I want to learn from someone like Janice and then connect with other small business owners solving the same problems I am. So we've had attendees from many small businesses in Ottawa. We've had folks come in from Toronto and Kingston.
Yeah.
We've had different types of talks, and that's still kind of what we're figuring out is like, you know, we're not going to have 10 talks on the same topic.
No.
Small businesses. The whole point was that as a small business owner, you're there, whether it's Victoire, you know, curating excellent products for their mostly Canadian products for their, for their customers, or if it's Wheelhouse creating this incredible, you know, health experience and wellness experience. You don't have necessarily the background in HR or marketing or payroll or account. And so that is the one like real common, like that would be the common denominator between a lot of small businesses. So if one person has great experience with HR, what can they share? If another one has a great experience with funding or capital, how can we learn from them? And so over the last 2 years, we've hosted, I think, around 8 events and we've had lots of different folks come. We just did one on leadership just before before the end of the year. And it's been really great. I've met a lot of amazing people. It's really fun because it's not formal. It's really conversational. You come and you connect and you share. And ideally, you take away something that you can implement into your business the next week.
Yes.
To have a greater impact, to increase sales.
Solve problems. What I think has been really exciting about the Guild and your vision, your collective vision for it, is it speaks to the need. Like, this is selling out every time, regardless of the topic. People want to come. They want to connect. They want to share. They want to ask questions. And so I think this whole convening power of the guild is part of what's so exciting about what this, you know, what you imagined and what has actually the magic that's been happening in the room when entrepreneurs get together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And many of them are women. Many are bringing, you know, one of the topics we discussed, it was not even the topic of conversation at the time, but Regine had had just had a baby, sweet little Max.
Yeah.
And she was like, holy shit, this is hard. Like, I'm a business owner.
Yes.
I'm now balancing, you know, this new role. And so that kind of came up as a topic. And just, again, like, it wasn't anything formal, but then there's a bunch of people there being like, here's how I dealt with that, or here's right. what helped me, or have you heard of this, or have you? And so then people leave with not only helpful tips for their business, but just like their lives in general.
Yes.
Yeah. I've learned a lot from the people that I've met there, and we're going to continue to, do kind of different kinds of events, different kinds of learning opportunities, but we have fun with it, right? So it's not like it must be every 3 weeks and it must be sponsored and it's like, when does it feel right for us as a community to get together to talk about something? When does it feel right to convene and to share and learn?
Yeah. So if people want to know more about the Guild, where they find out?
They can follow us on Instagram, the Guild Ottawa.
Okay.
Or I can share the link to to our website for sure. Yeah. And we post about our events on our Instagram account. And then, like I said, they usually happen every 2 months and they're different topics. We've had topics on, like I said, HR, we had topics on, the minimum wage increase. We talked about, we had some kind of mentors come in from different cities to share some of the things they'd learned based on different changes to their kind of small business space. So it's been really, really great. I think the next kind of iteration of this, we want to hear more stories like how certain women built the businesses that they've built and the processes that they went through. So we think we'll have a couple more kind of story-based gatherings coming up.
Yeah, when we hear each other's stories, it's just so powerful. I know from our research that we've done on women entrepreneurs as we've gone across the country, this idea of hearing other people's stories makes you feel less alone in your own challenges.
Yeah.
So I think the Guild is doing amazing stuff. So final question, Anna, you certainly are a champion of women leaders and a recognized leader here in Canada with an iconic company, Shopify. So what's your dream for Canada?
Ooh, great question, Janice. My dream for Canada is to continue to show up as a leader in diversity.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing some really great progress in our government, but how can we have more female leaders, more leaders from underrepresented groups in our communities speaking up, being representatives, whether that be in the business space or in government. I'd like to see Canada continue to lead. Let's be leaders. Let's show off our small businesses. Let's support them. Like, I would love to just see more entrepreneurs who have very different experiences from the typical business owner in Canada continue to thrive and to grow. And so I want to see us just like figure out ways to support them, because it's not easy being a small business owner, especially if your background is not, you know, maybe if you're not from a socioeconomic background that would allow for you to kind of like remove some of those barriers. How can we support those entrepreneurs? Because the more diversity we have across our business, our small business community and our community writ large, the better we can be on an international stage.
Anna, this is a beautiful dream for Canada. Thank you for sharing it. Anna Lambert, Director of Talent Acquisition at the iconic Shopify. From intern to director in very little time, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Fearless Women podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Janice. This was fun.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And follow us on Instagram at Fearless Women Podcast.